First off, I have to ask you, am I pronouncing the name right when I say Dozat St. Marie?
Close. It's Dozat St. Marie.
Dozat St. Marie. Now, is the T silent?
So, you know, it probably is supposed to be. It's French. Both last names are French. We're both from Louisiana.
Okay.
And obviously, lots of French heritage there. So it probably should be, but we don't. We pronounce the T, so it's Dozat St. Marie.
Now, how did you come up with the name?
Well, just...
We went back and forth forever.
Yeah. We tried to find a hipper, fan name, but just nothing really suited us. It just didn't feel right. And so we just kind of ended up with, hey, our last names are pretty cool. Let's just do that.
So that's literally your last names then, basically.
Yep. Matt Dozat. She's Heather St. Marie.
And I'm Heather St. Marie.
Oh, wow. Wow. Yeah, because I was wondering what's it mean. I thought it was something either Catholic or Creole. You know,
I was raised Catholic and I'm a little Creole.
So how did Dozat St. Marie start?
Well, you know, Matt was in high school and I had just gotten to college and I was bored. I was looking for something to do. And he was looking to put a band together. And we ultimately ended up meeting up and I auditioned and we put a rock band together. While we were kind of writing songs and finding band members, he and I started playing in little coffee shops acoustically. And it was a lot of fun, you know, and that's kind of what we got. We're huge fans of Alice in Chains, so really tight vocal harmonies have always been a part of our music, you know, and we kind of sync together like that. And then, we took off and did the whole rock thing for a while. And as the gas prices were going up, you know, and things, it got harder and harder to actually make a really good living on the road. But we weren't ready to give it up, so we decided to kind of come full circle, and just the two of us hit the road in a car instead of a big, you know, a touring rig, and just do it stripped down, the guitar and the vocals, like we started out.
Now, are you guys still stripped down, or are you back with a backing band? Because the songs on the new album are pretty rich.
It's stripped down, yeah, definitely only two people. We performed a few times with some other band, and we don't like it as much. I mean, it's fun, but we enjoy the power of just the two. And so, obviously, yeah, on the record, there's some more instrumentation to cover, and so that keeps me pretty busy. I'm covering a lot of it using, like, looping stuff live, and I've got... little percussion section at my feet that I'm playing while doing everything else. So
it's kind of a show in itself, to be honest.
Yeah, it's its own thing. It sounds really full. But yeah, that's the way we like it. I don't know why. I think there's some value in just the duo. And, you know, we're just making as much sound as we possibly can. And that's the way we're kind of digging it right now. I mean, maybe in the future we might do some stuff, but I think probably if we did, I would think about like string sections, just something different. Because we have a band too. We still have our rock band Hydra Vibe. So I think that's maybe that's another reason we have like a really full, really rich band. And so when we tour this way, we really appreciate having just the two.
Because I could see the, you know, you going either way, because like I said, the songs are really textured and have a rich sound to them. Case in point, you do two versions of the title track.
Right.
Yeah, you do. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I cut you off. I'm sorry.
That's all right. Well, basically, I was just going to say, you do two versions of the title track Falling Again, and one is an acoustic version, and one is a regular full-bodied version, but they both sound really layered, really textured, and have a really rich sound. Is that the fact that you're just a duo and maybe limited instrument-wise, does that affect your songwriting?
Well, you know, I think it affected the producing, and Matt produced it, but I think I'm going to just answer a little bit on his behalf. You know, this was a very touchy album to make because too quickly you can overproduce and fill it up so much. And a lot of this whole thing was just really about the stripped down bareness of the lyrics and the music. But when it came to Falling Again, you know, we had a version. Matt originally wrote it on piano. And we, you know, recorded it, and it's, you know, beautiful. And then we started playing live, you know, started doing some little test shows. And, of course, we weren't going to wheel out a piano. It just adds to the whole, you know, nightmare of touring and scheduling and getting things. So it was like we did a guitar version. And we really fell in love with that version as well. So we went back into the studio to wrap up the EP and just decided, you know, we're going to give both versions. They're kind of like different songs in some way. They're, you know, slightly different feels to them. So we just re-recorded everything with that different guitar feel. And then when you come to a live show, you know, there's obviously, Matt does a lot of looping, but there's not as many layers. So you're going to get a third version, which is the absolute most stripped down version that we play live, the two of us. So kind of treat each song like its own little living entity, and they kind of morph and change as they go.
Now how does it gel in the studio with you just being two? Because I've been in bands before, and I've recorded albums before, but I've always been in four pieces, but I've always been the only guitar player. So I kind of see both sides of it, you know, where how much should we overdub versus how much should we just sound live? Now how do you guys work that out?
Well, it was a new thing for us. We didn't know, there was no sonic template for Dozai St. Marie. So we had to kind of figure that out in the studio. We knew we really wanted to just be a duo. So we focused on the vocals and acoustic guitar first and foremost. And then built from there, I just kind of added a little production, you know, whatever we felt was appropriate. We didn't want to go too far. So just kind of added whatever we could to make it the presentation, I guess the presentation that we felt the song deserved. And actually I had a friend, Ryan Green, he's also, I work with him, and he kind of, we brought him in frequently to kind of listen, just to be the unbiased ears, because obviously we're really close to this, the studio project. So we bring him in just to kind of give the thumbs up, and that was really helpful. But yeah, we always kind of, the anchor is the acoustic guitar and the vocals. And that obviously is going to be a lot of the focus live too, although we're rounding it out with a lot of percussion and whatever else we can do.
Mm-hmm. Now, what was it like when you first moved out to LA? I mean, because LA, I get a lot of people that say LA is kind of a culture shock, especially when they're from the Midwest. what was that like for you guys?
Well, you know, we were doing as teenagers, you know, when you're teenagers and you're carefree, you've got really nothing but time on your hands. And we would play these shows and raise a lot of money. You know, the really big shows, you know, Hydra Vibe by Rock Band, we'd do these huge shows and raise a lot of money. And, you know, we didn't have bills or anything, so we just take the money and drive out to California and spend 3 weeks out here playing shows. That's kind of just what we were doing it for, you know, and getting a name out here and kind of getting a little network. So we weren't like, you know, newbies completely when we moved. You know, we already knew some people. We had, you know, some name recognition. So a little easier transition, probably much smarter for us. But because of that, you know, Matt was on the radar of a lot of talent scouts and this main guy who puts bands together. You know, like when Gwen Stefani goes out on tour for her solo project, she calls him and says, these are the instruments I need, find me players. And so Matt was on his radar and people were calling about him. So we got there, the Friday of Labor Day weekend. So Monday's a holiday. On Tuesday, he called the guy. He said, hey, look, you know, I'm in town. I moved here. I'm now living here. Oh, great. Look, we got an audition on Thursday. Come pick up the tracks to learn it, be here at whatever place. And on Thursday, he got the Kelly Osbourne gig and was her lead guitar player. So he left, like, you know, right like within 3 weeks, you know, he's playing on Jay Leno on a Tonight Show. And then was like, well, see you in 3 months. We're going off on a world tour. So we weren't prepared for that. Mm-hmm. You know, we weren't prepared for the craziness of all of that. You know, it was kind of surreal. And for me, like, I really wasn't prepared to be living in LA by myself. You know, but luckily, it just gave me a whole lot of time. I just figured, well, you know, focus on the music and finding people. So he would email songs back to me, and I'd email back to him, and we just kind of started writing like that. But it was a surreal trip. you know, but really a lot of fun.
That was actually going to be my next question, was about the Kelly Osbourne gig, because, and you know, like, that's like a glass half full or glass half empty scenario. I mean, on one aspect, you know, it's really cool because it gets, you know, your names out there on a certain way, but then on another plane, you guys are split up for a while.
Right. Well, I guess it was it made for a fairly easy transition to life out here. Because it was a huge injection of resources, network. So, you know, while we were, you know, I was touring, I was still working with Heather to, you know, our folks would still put our band back together and get that going. And so, you know, it gave us a bigger resource of players, which, you know, we focused on finding D-Ride players and rounding out the band. And so it really helped in that regard, and still does today. I mean, we've got great long-lasting relationships. The Osbournes are a wonderful family, and they treat us like family. And so, yeah, it's definitely a very good thing.
Well, and I think the way we always look at it, you know, a lot of our songs deal about, like, you know, life and death, or love and hate. And being apart is just as important as being together writing. You know, I think it adds a complexity, and the more experiences you have in life, good or bad, it helps to bring something to the table, you know, when you're writing. Because nobody wants to hear, like, a 15-year-old's journal of, I like this, and I'm so happy.
Exactly.
So I think, in the end, we both knew that it was good for his career, but it was also good for our career. And they, like Matt said, I mean, they took us under their wing. You know, I mean, I'm fortunate enough, and I know it sounds like I'm bragging, but I'm going to brag. I mean, I got to sit with Ozzy Osbourne, and he's telling me, giving me tips and advice, you know, like, whatever happens on the stage, just leave it there. It's going to be fine. And, you know, the day that I used to get so nervous on stage, and I thought it was a flaw. And he's like, no, the day that you're not nervous is when you need to hang it up, because that's when it doesn't matter to you anymore. And he's like, I still get nervous. And I'm thinking, man, I mean, words from the God's mouth himself, you know, the rock God, you know, what better can you ask for? You know, so it was definitely a great experience for both of us.
Well, and plus, I think the greatest thing, and, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, would be that, you know, if you leave an impression on people like Ozzy, Sharon, and Kelly, when their friends, who are also famous, need a guitarist or an instrumentalist or background vocals or anything else, that your names could end up being on the tip of their tongues.
Sure.
Absolutely.
That's happened, for sure. That definitely happened as well.
Because out in L.A., I mean, from what I hear, you know, word of mouth is the best form of advertising, like, by far, for anything.
I think that's true anywhere. Word of mouth is always, you know, it's taken the most seriously. Referrals. So, yeah, it's worked out well.
Now, did that lead up to your next break, which what I'm talking about is being on the Saw 3 soundtrack?
Well, you know, it's really just through networking, because I rehearsed at a large facility in North Hollywood with Kelly, and Ozzy rehearsed right next door to us. And at the time, they were really busy with the MTV show. We had, you know, the cameras bounced around and everything. So, you know, they would call for rehearsals, but then Kelly and Ozzy would usually arrive late due to, you know, whatever with that stuff. And so I would just hang out next door with Ozzy's band. And so became friends with the bass player at the time was Robert Trujillo. And so we started hanging out. Trujillo had a place down in Venice, and we would hang out at his place every Sunday for barbecue. And one day he introduced us to a girl that he had a band with long ago. Her name is Shawnee Smith, and then she is the actress that became Amanda in the Saw film. And so she started bringing, you know, that the Saw camp to the Hyderabad shows. So indirectly, yeah, I guess it did kind of lead to it through networking.
Nice. Now, how does Hydra Vibe sound compare to what you're doing here with Doozat St. Marie?
It's heavy.
I mean,
it's the same thing. It's just with heavy, guitar-laden riffy rock, right? But it's, yeah. Yeah, at the same time, it's kind of a little bit of the same recipe of the two vocals, and obviously Heather's really strong vocal.
Because I would have never guessed that, like, I mean, you guys are talking about, like, metal idols, and I would have never guessed you guys coming from a metal background after listening to songs like Time Slips Away and Sinking Down and the, you know, both versions of Falling Again. I mean, but it makes sense in hindsight after telling me this, because, like I was saying before I knew all this, that, you know, the songs are rich and textured.
Yes.
You know, so well, let's talk about some of your other influences then, because obviously you have some metal background, because Robert Trujillo's in Metallica now, you know, and,
right.
and that whole group. I mean, you're talking about bands I idolized in high school, like Suicidal Tendencies and, you know, all that stuff. So, I mean, what other influences do you have that we wouldn't never guess, I guess you could say?
You know, for me, I happen to have a very cool mom who loved music. I didn't think she was cool or part in my life, you know. But looking back, I mean, she was introducing me to Rush and you know, Queen, Freddie Mercury. I mean, oh my gosh, you know. Yeah, King Crimson, you know, just, and then like even soulful stuff, you know, like the Commodores and you know, things like that. So, and we'd sing together all the time. I mean, I think that's where I get that just love of music, love of singing. Yeah, you know, and just a deep appreciation. But growing up in South Louisiana, I mean, everyone's a musician, you know, and I mean, it's New Orleans obviously is a concentrated form of that, because on every little, you know, doorstep is a musician playing his heart out or her heart out.
Well, you're in the Delta. I mean, it's the birth of Delta blues.
Yeah, exactly. And it's kind of in our blood. I mean, you know, it's, hey, I'm going to sing. Well, of course you are. You know, it's not a big surprise. It's just a matter of, you know, how far you're going to take it. You know, but Matt has some other interesting influences. I'll let him talk for a second.
I grew up, but I have brothers that are 10 and 11 years older, so I grew up with listening to their records. So for me, a lot of classic rock to Rush, Zeppelin, Black Sabbath, Boston, actually. We in fact recently discovered that Boston must have been a huge influence on me, because in listening to it in recent years, they've got all the awesome vocal harmonies and guitar harmonies, which I always love, and riffs and the songwriting. I think that one must have been huge for me. So yeah, it's heavily rooted in that, but at the same time, like, I love Jim Croce. It's you know, that's his songwriting is a big influence. Old Elvis.
Oh yeah, I love the Elvis.
You know, so I mean, it's fairly diverse. Obviously, we have our backgrounds working together in more of a heavier. I guess we've always been a little bit of a heavier rock scene. Which has made us really strong as a unit. You know, we've been singing together for a long time, but singing together with such a loud environment, I guess, has made us project more. We're going to be a lot louder than your normal singer-songwriter duo. It's going to be edgier. So that's working for us right now.
I think it's great that you both mentioned Rush right off the bat. That's like one of my that's like one of my favorite bands. And you know, it's funny. Another thing in hindsight, it makes sense too with you, Matt, and the pedals and the loops and everything. Because I mean, that's Geddy Lee all the way.
Yes. Yeah, you're right. Know? Yeah. And I look at him. It's like, man, that dude is so busy and he's just nailing it. And so that's kind of, you know, inspiration. I would get bored just playing an acoustic guitar and singing. I've got to step it up and do more. So I'm literally playing drums with my feet. I have a hockey puck that is hollowed out, and it's got a transducer mic in there. That's my kick. And then I've got a mounted tambourine for the snare. And so it's interesting. It's fun. And we're constantly trying to step up that game too. I mean, in the future, you'll see us with probably doing a lot more, making a lot more noise.
Now, you guys are actually sponsored by a few, like, music companies, right? Like Elixir Strings, yeah, and Taylor Guitars and Rivera Amps. which I've 2 out of the 3 I'm in love with. I've never played a Rivera amp, but I use Elixir strings all the time, and I've got, you know, an arsenal with Taylors behind me actually right now.
Oh wow!
Yeah,
nice.
Yeah, well, it's actually Taylors, Gibsons, and a bunch of bastardized Fender Strats. I got turned on to Elixir strings like 3 years ago because of the Teflon coating.
Yeah,
you know, I love that. I mean, I just can't get enough of these. These guitars just sound so bright now. I was wondering if I needed new pickups, you know, until I switched strings. I mean, how do you guys do stuff like that? Were you guys playing this stuff before?
Well, with Taylor, they stepped up big time, and they actually launched Dozat St. Marie quite a bit earlier last year. Well, I guess that was, Heather, was that our first tour that they flew us out for Acoustifest?
Yes.
Yeah. So like we played our first show here in Hollywood, and I think the next day Taylor flew us out to a large, it's really cool. It's this, music store. What they do once a year, they have what they call Acoustifest, and it's an exclusive event. You buy tickets, but with your ticket price, you get concert. There are I don't know how many performers, and special deals only that day. And the store is closed now; it's not open to the public. So what they do is they fly out one Taylor artist, one Gibson artist, you know, one Fender artist, and so on. And we were the Taylor artist. So they flew us out there to do that, and that was awesome. And then while we were out there, they carted us around to do some other in-store thing. And so we've been doing that for Taylor, you know, a few times last year all over the country, where we kind of go in. They do, they'll do like an event like Find Your Fit or whatever, and this will send a van full of acoustic guitars and a representative to go through all the different models. And you might have me play a little bit, and then Heather and I do a little mini concert. So they actually really stepped up and gave us a huge boost last year, so we're thankful for that. And they also helped me get the endorsement with Elixir, since they're, you know, that's all they use on their guitars is Elixirs. And so they facilitated that, which was awesome because I love the strings, but I go through strings a lot, and Elixirs are really expensive.
Yeah, I know.
even though they last so much longer, you know, I'm still going to go through them because we play every night. So, but getting hooked up with them has been very good because now I can do that. Helps alleviate the cost of those strings. And then Rivera, we have known the Rivera guys for a very long time. I've played Rivera with Hydrovibe. I'm also Mesa Boogie endorsed, so I do both with Hydrovibe. So, but they've been extremely helpful too. They make really nice acoustic amps. I play the Rivera Sedona Lite. So they actually hooked me up with that for a tour that I did with singer-songwriter Skylar Fisk. So I've had that amp for a while.
Nice. Right, but I saw that on your website earlier today, and I was like, oh, man, Elixir. Because yeah. I'm serious. I played GHS for about 10 years, and then they always seemed, I mean, not to cut on them, but they got dull quick, the sound.
Yeah.
You know,
that's probably you as the player, because some people don't dull the strings as fast, but I really do. It has something to do with your pH, I think. And regular strings, if I play them once, they're gonna be kind of tarnished and start to dull that day.
Sometimes I'll get that crud on them, actually.
Yep.
You know, and I don't know about you, but sometimes I used to. I know this is bad for your guitar, but I used to take rubbing alcohol and put it on a washcloth. And then wipe the strings down real quick, even though I know that's horrible for your fretboard. But I mean, it would brighten them up for a gig or two.
Yeah, I've seen that done. I've seen guitar techs do, and I think I've seen guitar techs use Windex on them. I would never do that. I'll just change strings.
Yeah, that's murder. that is absolute murder on your fretboard because it dries the wood out. You know.
Yeah. Now,
if you want to relic it, you know, like right. really quick. I mean, yeah, keep doing it, but.
Yeah,
you know? but yeah, I mean, how do you get endorsements like that? Because we get a lot of artists that say, "Yeah, I've been trying to get an endorsement with Ibanez for 10 years, and they keep telling me to F myself." And
well, I was with Ibanez for I don't know if it was 10 years. I was with Ibanez for a long time, actually, acoustic only, because I'm electric guitars. I'm with Paul Reed Smith. And Ibanez, let's see, I got Ibanez because Kelly and I played, Playboy asked us to play an acoustic song for their 50th celebration at the Playboy Mansion. And so whenever I got that call, I put a call to Taylor, I think it's Taylor Martin, I don't remember who all I put in calls to, and you know, at the time, the artist deal was whatever it was. It was like maybe, I don't know if it's half off or something. And at the time, I couldn't afford it. I mean, I would have loved to have gone with one of them, and I just couldn't afford even at the half off. So I ended up going, Ibanez stepped up and said, "Hey, you know, we'll give you guitars and advertising." And they did a lot for me. They did a lot of good for a long time. And I've been with them this whole time, but then Taylor really stepped up, and you know, we decided that it was time. It's a new band, everything's new, good time to go with these guys who are stepping up, and they were going to help me you know, with those St. Marie finest all over doing these shows. So
nice. Now with you guys,
how do you get that? I mean, I guess that was easy because I had, you know, I was playing the Playboy Mansion and it was televised, and you know, any of the other endorsements that I got, like Paul Reed Smith, I played Paul Reed Smith for years, and then I got the Kelly Osbourne gig, and then I called them immediately, and I called everybody and kind of secured those relationships.
Nice, nice.
How do you do it now? I have no idea.
Well, basically, it sounds like what we were talking about earlier. It's word of mouth and networking.
Yeah, I mean, so at the time, I was on the MTV show, The Osbournes, and so they're getting a lot of mileage from, you know, me holding whatever guitar. So I think you have to consider it from their point of view. What can you do for them? You know, you already know what they can do for you. So if there's a way to add value, I think, you know, if somebody was asking me how do you get those endorsements, I would say get a nice list of tour dates on the books and go to them with that, or maybe you're getting a lot of views on your YouTube channel or whatever it is. Just think about it from their perspective. How can you add value to them? So
get some exposure so that they would want to endorse you.
Yeah, it works both ways.
Yeah. Now, it sounds like you guys have put in a lot of miles and have been around for a while. And I would say that if you've been around for the last 20 years or so, you've seen the transition from the old music scene to the new music scene, where what I mean is like the old way to promote yourself and everything to the new way, which is obviously internet, social media, file sharing, so on and so forth. Do you think musicians in your position have it better now or better then?
I think it's a little of both. You know, personally, you know, like I said, when we were kids, right, I remember going to, there are three main cities in northern Louisiana, right, like spanning about a 2-hour drive from west to east. We would go, the four members of the band would all go with little flyers that we had gone to, you know, Staples or Office Depot and made the four ups and had them all cut and bought. And every single dorm room got one. I mean, our backs were hurting. And we're like 18, 19, you know, and our backs were hurting from...
Oh, I remember those days, man. That was tough.
Yeah, it was. But, you know, that you put in so much effort that when people showed up at the show, it felt really good. It was a whole lot more satisfaction than sending out a mass blanket email on Facebook.
Well, and also, you know, so yeah, I was just going to say, and also, if you remember back in the day, too, this happened to my band a lot, was if you came, sometimes you'd come back and there'd be another band's poster, you know, stapled over yours.
Well, yeah.
That's fighting. That's fighting words there.
Yep.
Yeah. Right. You know, but there was like, you know,
we fought for it.
We were hungry for it. You know, and I think that, that comes out in your songs. You know, they always say, like, you know, the sophomore album of a band usually kind of sucks because they're like, eating nice, they got a cool place to live now, and they're not hungry. You know, I think also people didn't have so much distractions. I mean, just the phone in our hand is hours of entertainment if you just let yourself get sucked into it. So people were looking for a place to go, you know, like when I told you about those shows we were doing, we'd end up having kids coming from Dallas, from New Orleans, driving like 4, 5, 6 hours to come to these shows. That I don't know that people would put that much effort into these days.
No.
But on the flip side of that, you know, I'm sending out, you know, for this CD release, we're sending out to almost every continent. You know, we've got Japanese fans, we've got fans in Australia, we've got fans in all the UK. That would not have really happened, you know, back then either. You had a nucleus and that was pretty much where you could physically be. And now with the internet, you know, you're reaching people all over. So it's kind of pros and cons, I think. You know, we're just trying to be flexible and play the game.
Well, and I'm seeing a lot of bands doing what you're doing now, too, and not releasing full 10 to 13 track albums. They're doing EPs, and I noticed some bands are releasing some one song at a time now.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see a lot of that these days because of the internet, do you think?
For sure, yeah. People are releasing singles. That way they can get content out there quicker to the fans. Which I agree with. I think that we chose to do an EP on this run because we're following the trajectory of Hydra Vibe. We put out an EP as well. But that was only, that we were working on a full album, and we got word that we would have our song in Saw 3. And it was like, there was a small window of time, and that movie was going to hit the theaters. And so we hurried up and packaged 5 songs. We figured 5 songs, $5, easy. That way we'd have something because we were going to be hitting the road. And that worked out really well. You know, we had that. It was an easy purchase, $5 for everybody. And then we followed that with a full album. So we had a $10 price point. And so that seemed to work really well. And so we're kind of following that. Although I don't know if we're going to do an album next or EP next. It really is, at this point, a matter of time, you know, how much time we have, because we're so busy, we keep getting tours.
But it's hard to find the time to just sit there and do a full album.
I mean, it seems good. I enjoy having a $10 price point as well as a $5 price point. And we always think about merch table sales, because that's where we sell the majority of product anyway. We have, you know, we do this release and we have a bunch of sales, but then that slows until we hit the road again.
Now,
we're constantly focused.
Now, do you think the day of the super band is over? And what I mean by super band is, if you remember a few years ago, U2 got $60 million to re-up on their record deal, and then the same year, the Rolling Stones got $250 million for their farewell tour. Do you think those types of bands are a thing of the past?
I don't know. I mean,
I tend to think so. I mean, you know, it's kind of like people complain about the music industry, but, you know, in the time saving up to come out to L.A., I worked at car dealerships. I did everything there. I answered phones. I did warranty work in the service department, just really wherever they needed me. And I watched it, and it's, you know, the days of, yeah, this car is $20,000+, and they're making like $10,000 off of the customer. Those days were gone when the internet hit, and all of a sudden people realized, wait, you mean it only cost them this much? So this, you know, the customer is much smarter, and they just had to shift focus to better service, loyalty. You know, why are they going to keep coming back to us? Because they trust us. And it's the same for the music industry. You know, I think those big dollar days are kind of over because people are smarter about their money. But, you know, we just have to switch focus. You know, I think also in the 80s, you know, you see the music videos and, you know, they're getting off the tour bus and people are screaming and they're hoping to touch the person, you know. I think people now are like, hey, wait a minute. And it's kind of the same philosophy we've always had, that you're a huge part of our success. Our, you know, if we can go to a show and set up to play in an auditorium, and if nobody shows up, there's no show. So the fans are realizing that they're a part of this. So I think they want us to be approachable and they want to have a relationship with us, you know, kind of like friends rather than fans. So I think those things to me seem like that super rock status might be a little gone. I think we're going to have talent and people are going to appreciate it. It's just going to be a different form.
You think it's going to be more down to earth, basically?
I do. You know, for now, I mean, we still do have DJs and they're making millions.
Well, because you know, what I'm thinking of is, if you think about it, other than the phenomenons, like, I guess you could say Lady Gaga, Justin Bieber, you know, if you want to go by actual street credibility and stuff, the last supergroup basically was U2, or you could at least argue that. And they're 35 years old. You know, so wow. I mean, you could say that they were the successor of the Beatles, but who's their successor?
Right.
Yeah.
Don't know.
Right. Well, you know, with the age of MTV, it's not so much about musicianship a lot of times. It's kind of split. You've got artists and musicians, and then you've got entertainers. You know, and those are the ones that the record. It's easier to brand somebody as, you know, an entertainer. Dump a lot of money into it, put a backing band behind them, you know, and the wow factor, and it's great. And they're talented in their own right. It's just not the same talent of, you know, U2 and, you know, the Beatles or Elvis, you know, where you had to know how to do everything. You know, I like to joke, but, you know, not that I was a huge fan of the Mamas and Papas, but, you know, Mama Cass had an amazing voice. But would she have ever been signed after MTV? Probably not.
No, because they would have gone by looks.
Right.
At that point.
Yeah. And we would have lost out on that beautiful voice. You know, same with, you know, Janis Joplin. So, I don't know. Split, I think.
Well, do you think, let me ask you this. If Sony or Capitol or any other major label came up to you guys and said, we want to sign you right now, and then gave you the possibility of being that big, but the price was that you had to give up everything that a first signed, you know, first album act would have to give up, you know, with approval and this, that, and the other thing, would you do it, or would you keep going the way you're going now?
We already did it.
We already turned that record deal down.
We already did it. Yeah, we got that deal. We got that deal in 2005 or something. Yeah, we had a major label thing, and that's what we thought we needed, was to have you know, a label. And so we opened up, we did showcases, and we landed a big one, and really did not enjoy the experience. Our music suffered. I guess it's by committee, right? And so we realized that, you know, once we kind of let that go, the music became a little softer. They tried to make Heather just use whatever sex appeal they could try to sneak in, you know, and they tried to make us something that we were not.
So they tried to dictate your looks even.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Looks, lyrics, music, all of it.
It's more, yeah, like more, yeah, I don't know if it was it looks, but as much as just trying to, like, insert more sexual content into the lyrics, like blatant sexual content into the lyrics. And we're not about it. Like, we're true, like, artists, and we're kind of super serious about that and the craft, and we really have strong feelings about our lyrics. And so we were not really we weren't going to allow that to happen. And so we were a little bit at odds. And so we kind of just let that whole situation implode and let it go. Heather and I were just kind of quiet for a while. We were like, we'd rather just not do this than move forward with that situation. And so we just let all that blow away and decided we were going to do this only our way, and stay true to who we are. And we never look back.
Yeah. Now, I've had some artists, well, here's the funny conundrum we have that we've seen here millions of times over. We've had artists that are unsigned that are just starting out that all say, you know, yes, we want to get on, you know, RCA or Sony or Capitol or EMI or Virgin, you know, so on and so forth. And then we've had people like Billy Sheehan and John Corabi and, you know, stuff like that say, no, I would never, ever go back to that crap.
You know. We're open to whatever. We're open to any situation that it works for us and for everybody. But
as long as the music, you had asked about like how it is in a studio with the two of us, and I think it works well. And it kind of comes back to this because we've always stated the song has to come first. Our ego has to be put aside. It's got to be about the song. You know, and that kind of goes hand in hand with the business side of things. You know, we're open if somebody wants to come and, you know, help us tour the world. I mean, of course, I'd love that, but it's not at the risk of our songs.
Yeah, I think you said it there. Like, we're open to a business arrangement, but we are not willing to compromise any bit of artistic integrity. And now. We're super happy with where we're at. I mean, it's working. We're independent. We like being independent. The whole thing with the Saw 3, that song itself was about, we just come through that experience of the major label and realized that we, and everything kind of just, we let it all fall apart and we kind of rose from those ashes. And that was really, that's what that song is about, Killer Inside. And so that situation was obviously very good for us. And we launched out with the band and we toured a lot. And, we laid all the groundwork for now Dos Ave Maria is enjoying, you know, all the fruits of those labors.
Nice. Now, what does Dos Ave Maria have coming up within the next few months? What are your plans?
Definitely touring. Yeah, we're working on that now, the first tour of the year. We usually, everybody's getting their winter weather. We usually hang out here in Los Angeles during that time because we did some sliding with the band on the tour. I don't remember. I think it was in like March or something. And hit a little black ice, did some sliding, and it wasn't a problem. It just scared everybody. And, there were some other bands that were on that tour that split out and, you know, ended up in ditches. And so we just kind of don't do it if we don't have to.
I got all sorts of driving stories for this winter.
Oh, right. So we just hang out here in LA and we write and record and, you know, take care of whatever business stuff. That's why the timing of this EP release is perfect because we're doing all of our interviews and press and promo now and just staying out of any of the, you know, the dangerous, icy weather. And then we typically will launch out in like April, May and go through the South just to make sure you guys are all thawed out. And then we head up your way usually on the next tour, which will be probably early summer.
Nice. Now, where can we find you guys online?
We're on all the social networks you have to be these days, right? You know, Facebook, Twitter. We're really active on Instagram. We like to take a lot of pictures on the road. And then, you know, what we tell people that the best thing to do is come to our official website because it all branches out from there. You know, and so I'll spell it because we do have those weird French last names. So it's www.dauvatstmarie.com.